Shit. Shit. In April 1975, what events or what things do you remember, like, prior to the takeover? Say the weeks ahead. You had mentioned before of going to school and the teachers striking, a lot of chaos. And your father's condition. What else do you recall about that?
In a week before, or a month?
Any time before.
Well, this time it's coming closer now. The Khmer Rouge are closer. They are like, they're surrounding the Phnom Penh capital now. My family live on the east, well, considered the east and east and southeast of the city itself, but we're still in the city. And we live very close to Mekong River, where the river meet and divide into four parts. We live very close to that, and that's the place where I myself observe the fighting and really see the fighting, the bomb and the attack on the Khmer Rouge. This is like in a week now. They're very close now. The river really separate them from coming very fast. The Khmer Rouge is on one side of the river, and the Republican Lono regime on the other side. And there's attack there, and the Republican sends the Marine to fight, to block from the Khmer Rouge from coming into the capital itself. This is like only a few days before the takeover. And the attack is not quite severe as in other places, but has been an attack a few days before. Yeah.
You said you witnessed or you saw the actual fighting. What like, do you recall seeing just the bombs or?
Well, not just the bomb. You know, the artillery that the Mekong River separate them, and this is in the daytime, a few days. This is by this time the school is closed now, only a few days. And on the Lono regime itself, which is the city considered to be the capital city. People can still travel. I mean, you know, cars are going, but the fighting is just right there. Everybody witnessed the situation, and I happened to see the fighting with the artillery and the firearm from the Marine when they pushed the Khmer Rouge back away from the river. And this is in the daytime too. It's not in the nighttime. The attack has been several days along this river. It separates the river. And the attack, I would say of several days, that has been the problem to the city.
So this was close by where you live?
Oh, this is very close now. This is like, as long as they can the Khmer Rouge could cross the river, they conquer the war. And this is on the southeast of the city. On the west side, which is the airport, the only airport for the capital city, Phu Chin Thong Airport, has been attacked during this time too. So the major transportation the airport has been attacked, and the water route, the Mekong River is the main water route for Kampuchean people, had been attacked during this period now, so we cannot go any place except inside the capital itself.
So the city was being blocked off.
Right. It's blocked off by the Khmer Rouge.
What did your insurance parents warn you, you know, when you went out and watched these things? Or were they say, you know, don't?
It's not quite dangerous because the river itself is quite large, mm-hmm. and we can see from a distance because as artillery, you know, when what you call it, when artillery job, mm-hmm. you know, shooting from the marine, it show the light, and that's the only thing we can see and hear the sound, but there's no really anything that can affect people on this side of the river.
I see.
So it's not quite dangerous. My parents warned me about that, but, you know, 16 years old, you want to see something interesting, right? 15. And it's not scary. It's like you've been, the cover of city itself has been severely attacked several times now, and this is like one of those situation again, you know.
Did you go watch this with your friends, or what, you know?
Well, I have a friend, and we just go there, and we don't stay there all the time, you know, we just, it's interesting, and we want to see what happened. Mm-hmm. It's not that scary, you know, it's not like, well, you go and watch an attack. No, what happened, the river that really allows you to stay on one side of the river and let you see, because this is like the place where the river divided into four parts,
mm-hmm.
the four different rivers, and you can, on one side of the river, and you can see what's going on the other side of the river, but nothing's going to happen to you.
I see. You had a good vantage point.
Right. You can see what happened. You can hear the artillery. You can hear the gunfire. But at the same time, you cannot, you could not be heard by anything like, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, just, if the Khmer Rouge, how you say it, if they have the artillery over to the capital, yes, it may happen, it may hurt us. But usually they don't in the daytime. The problem is this, they don't attack with the artillery very much because the Republican Party's army still have the airplane,
mm-hmm.
airplane fire, where they can see if the Khmer Rouge do anything drastic from the ground, the airplane can see and they can bomb at that place.
I see.
So in the daytime, they don't, what you call it?
They don't make their attacks.
They don't make that attack with artillery, you know, to a long distance attack. But at night.
At night
they do.
So that was, it was more scarier at night then.
At night, yeah. Most of the time, they like to do it at dinner time. It's about
dinner time?
Between 5, 7 and 8. That's a good time where everybody is at home. And
was that the scariest time then?
Yeah, and we can never know what when or to expect what, except that sometimes, this is like a few days before the takeover, it's like we just wait to hear the noise. You know, if the first one hit us, then we all, you know, it's all over for us. But if the first artillery did not hit us, we can go into, you know, we dig the dirt and we can go into, what do you call it?
Bomb shelter.
Yeah, we can go into that and for safety. But, you know, we always pray that the first one never hit us, so we know that.
Mm-hmm.
Because usually, After the first one came, like, tons of them came after, you know, so...
In one area, huh?
Yeah, in one particular area. And especially the area where my family lived, because then, like, I told you last time, we are not too far from American Embassy, and we are not too far from Lunar Palace. So, this is the place where they like to hit the most.
Mm.
So.
What, at this time, your father was...
The action to the war?
Yeah, he was still with you. You said, no, you said it in our last day, but he became very depressed and then very ill. Is that correct?
Not physically, not quite ill where he cannot do anything. He just lost interest in doing anything. It doesn't mean that he's no longer responsible for the family. He's still responsible for the family. To watch over us, what's happening, what we were doing, to give us advice. But he's not quite active with what the father should be. I don't know what a father should be, but quite acting like he's kind of back, relaxed, didn't say much, didn't talk much. He still talk with the family, but he just don't have much to say anymore. And about the war situation, he doesn't have any view about the war, except the only thing that he can get from the newspaper in town, in the city. And a lot of those people are not saying much either. And the radio didn't say much.
So he sort of developed what into a very quiet person.
I would agree with that. It's not quiet. He's still talking, not regularly, but he's still, you know, like, talk, quiet person, not quiet, but he's still talk. But he lost interest in politics now, because what happened to the family, and my mom didn't like it very much, because it really ruined the family. We lost just about everything. My father himself lost respect in the community.
Because he wasn't working anymore?
He wasn't working, he wasn't making a lot of money. Didn't make any money, as a matter of fact. As I mentioned earlier, that my two sisters were part of the family, and they would support the family. And it's like, financially supporting the family is like giving to my sister, the oldest and the second one, that they capable of making enough money to support the family. So that.
So it's like, he was no longer in control. That was that maybe the perception
in control
of the family.
No, the children are still respecting him, you know. I guess because is it because of the family or because of culture? It's both, I guess, because how we raised and because of the custom that we live in. And we all still respect him. It's quite the fact
as a family, yeah.
As a family, yeah.
But then, could you explain a little bit? He lost faith in the community. The neighborhood, is that what was?
And they, see, this neighborhood, he's been there for a long, long time, and he get to know quite a few people. And after what happened, after the war, and after Hu Yun and Hu Nam gone into the jungle, things just didn't look great for us. And again, just back to what we have said already, that he, you know, by having Huyun and Hunam there, it's like we have somebody to back up when we have problem. And now it's just like you don't have anybody to back you up. And again, it's a community where people tend to respect you if you have, like, a friend has high education, in a government position, or something like that. People tend to respect you by that, too. That's what we've gone through.
So it's almost as if your father had a tremendous amount of faith in these people.
Faith and respect. Not tremendous, but to the extent that people tend to look up to him and...
He believed in them.
Yeah,
like someone would believe in a congressman or...
Right, and
a leader.
Right. And again, Cambodian society by this time with not like American society now with... It's so large that we lost the sense of community.
Mm-hmm.
At this time, the sense of community is very tight. In America right now, I don't think we have the sense of a small community anymore.
Right.
Collectively, we have a big community as a state or city. You know, we listen to the congressman or statesman or the governor. And we have that big community. But we don't have a sense of small community now. And that's... It's not the same as what we came from. What we came from, we have a sense of community because we know our neighbor, we talk to our neighbor, and this small, but in a sense it's large to us, large enough that we trust the community. And the community we live in is like that, and people tend to socialize by that, with neighbor, we talk, and... And again, we have to look at all of this from other things too, because Cambodian society at this time is not as busy and crazy as American now. People are so fast and so busy, don't have time for fun. We're still behind what modernization is, but we have a lot of fun for each other, and that gave us a sense of community, and with that, my father has that in the community, that little community, people still respect him. And what happened after the political upheaval took place, people tend to, not to hate him, but in a sense, they're afraid that if they get involved with my father, the government, the Republican government, will be after them. So this is like, after American government introduced into our Cambodian society, by this time, we had a concept of CIA. We had this concept of CIA, somebody spying on other people, very long time ago, but at this time, people are even more aware of what, afraid of other people spying on each other. And he lost the respect because of that, because people don't want to get involved.
There's a great fear.
Right. And what happened during this time, if something serious happened, they knock on your door at night. The Republicans knock on your door at night, pull out the person they want to pull out, anybody, your father, your brother, or it can be anybody in your family.
Yeah.
Take out that person, and you don't know who to call in the morning. You call the Republican, the police, they say, I don't know. It's just so scary at this time. They can pull out anybody at any moment. And they've done this at night. They come at night, they knock on the door, and...
You've known of instances like this, then. I mean...
Oh, yes. This is not just my family has been hit with this, but a lot of people that we know and a lot of people who've been involved with who you know, who know, disappear that way.
Mm.
It's just, we don't know where they are, where they were. They can be in a prison, or they can, could be executed at that particular night, and we never know. And these people come with gun in their hands.
And this is the first I've heard of this.
But this is not, it's not uncommon. It's very common during, this is 1969 and 1970, 1971, they done this. And it was scary to the whole community and the whole society itself, because they would say it's the Khmer Rouge doing this. It's not, and we could never find out who did it. Because Cambodian are Cambodian, when you dress in a particular way of army, that's it. And the security for the society itself is not, for the city folk is not, is a joke by this time. I mean, people, at this time, people who have money, who is in a government position, they tend to use gun to protect themselves at this time. So
people were disappearing even before the Khmer Rouge came to power.
Yes.
Basically.
Yes, yes.
And obviously your father was aware of
he was quite aware about this. That's why he lost all of his contact, because he never know what's going to happen to him. It could be any time.
Now, when he closed down his business, would you say he closed his business down because it was a result of, say, the government putting pressure on him, or because of this situation in the city that there were not enough people buying jewelry, or what do you think?
No, I don't think it's the pressure of the government. The government didn't put any pressure on him. It's a whole investigation there, here and there, because he'd been involved with Hu Yun and Hunan. Hu Yun came and ate at our house and became part of our family. And because of that, there's a little investigation there. The authority of the city came in and talked to my parents about that, but they didn't really put any pressure on the parent about his business at all. But at this time now, my sister are ready to get a job, and it's just fortunate that both of them were able to obtain a job that capable of maintaining the family. And it gave my father a sense of releasing the responsibility, not to giving up the responsibility, but releasing the financially.
Yeah, the burden.
Right.
The burden of doing that. I see. Okay. Right during April, to change things here on
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What evidence that you saw, whether through the radio, through, you know, hearing from people and stuff,
about the takeover?
About the takeover.
Well, I don't remember if I told you about my sister working with the American doctor.
Yes, I think you did. Yeah.
I think I did. I mentioned that. That's the only source of the real source of information that I still remember, and our family still talk about it until today, that as being the American outsider working in the country, they have, just like you stand on top of the mountain looking down at the valley, and you can see what's going to happen and what's going to end up. But being a Cambodian citizen living in the valley, you cannot see much. As the people under the Buddhist religion, we don't expect other people to kill other people, just like what happened in the Khmer Rouge. And my father was a strong believer that nobody's going to kill anybody, just like animal like that. And but the guy told my sister that your family had need to get out of the country.
The American guy,
right. And my sister, like we talked last time, that my sister came and discussed with my family, and we disagreed because we never thought it could never happen, because my father, my mom always believed that when the marriage took over, we're going to meet our family, we're going to meet our relative back home, we're going to be able to travel, we're going to have peace.
Peace.
And justice. And those are the words that they lie, you know. Until now that we know that they were lying. But then, who knows? I mean, they promised us that's going to happen. That we're going to have what they promised.
So, like your father, do you think, this is all very speculative,
mm-hmm.
do you think he was somewhat optimistic, or he was hoping, anticipating the takeover, because Phu Nguyen was a part of the Khmer Rouge?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that means?
I would say that he still has a high hope about that. He still, because we tied to Phu Nguyen in the first place, and he still has a high hope that, well, because we know this big guy, and he's going to be big after the takeover, and who's going to kick us out of the capital? That is not true. I mean, they probably killed all of those big Republican leader, but not us.
Yeah.
Now that's a wrong, as we all know now, it was a wrong assumption on his part, but at that time that was right, and in the right time, the right thing that he would expect.
Everybody had hope.
Right. Especially when you have somebody, you knew somebody going to be big and controlling the power. I would say that part of it, because he still believes in that, that's the reason that he never wanted to get out of the country. And again, leaving your country is like, hey, you leave everything behind, you know? What you have earned for after you marry so many years, 5 children, a house, and a lot of other property that you cannot just get on a plane with American people. And this is what happened, 3 days. Did I tell you last time that the 3 days before the takeover?
No.
3 days before the takeover, this is like very critical time now. This guy said, you have to go, you have to get out of the country. My sister saying, oh, I still want to go. My sister wanted to go, but she's still single. And single woman in Cambodia, they cannot just go out that much.
Yeah.
They don't have that much freedom. Probably a guy could be able to get out at that time, but not a girl. Anyway, 3 days before the takeover, the American troop, this is American troop, land in on the southeast. This is like about a kilometer from American from the Nono Palace. This place we call Billing, using the French word, I guess. We call Billing. And at this place, mostly the foreigner or the people who work for the government are qualified to live in these places.
Okay.
And the American troop land there, and they get all, this is like the last trip for American people to get out of the country. This is 3 days. And this is like 7:30 in the morning when the troops start landing. The helicopters land there, and those people waiting for the plane to get, these people get out of Cambodia to Thailand, and my sister really wanted to get on the plane at this time, but she couldn't make it.
She'd be leaving the family behind, wouldn't
right.
she?
Right. And she didn't know where she was going to be.
Would she have gone with this doctor? I mean, would she, the doctor have taken care of her? Or
we never know what's going to happen. We never knew, you know, because this doctor say, you have to get out and come with me. But me where in America? We see only in the paper, you know.
Right.
We visit, we don't have enough relative here to tell us how great America is.